What's up, everyone? This is Anthony Pompliano. Most of you know me as Pomp. You're listening to Off the Chain, simply the best podcast in crypto. Let's kick this thing off.
Spencer Dinwiddie is a professional NBA player who is currently playing for the Brooklyn Nets. He was previously selected in the second round of the NBA draft after playing at the University of Colorado. In this conversation, we discuss Spencer's childhood playing multiple sports, why he chose Colorado over Harvard after getting a 1400 on his SATs, what it's like being injured months before the NBA draft, what the day in the life of an NBA player is like, what he is planning to do during the tokenization of his NBA contract, why the NBA doesn't like it, how he views the current free speech issues surrounding China and the NBA, especially because he plays for an owner who is more involved than others, and he finally settles the greatest of all time debate between Jordan, Kobe, and LeBron. I really enjoyed this conversation, and I hope you do as well.
Skirt, skirt!
Want to know who has the best URL? Crypto.com. That's right, Crypto.com. They're a crypto platform with one goal, motherfucking mass adoption. That's why we're all here. We're trying to get crypto in every wallet. Crypto.com is helping people do that through buying, earning, lending, and card payment. Everything you could want at Crypto.com. Go help your boy out. Tell him Pomp sent you. Download the app or visit Crypto.com. Pomp's got you, always.
Ever wanted to get into mining and didn't know how? Don't worry, your boy Pomp's got you. Everybody got some electricity and Wi-Fi. All you got to do is go to coinmine.com, you buy a coin mine. It's like an Xbox or a PlayStation that helps you turn your electricity into Bitcoin. That's right. You purchase it, it shows up at your doorstep, you pull it out of the box, you plug it in, connect to your Wi-Fi, 5 minutes or less, you're mining Bitcoin. All you have to do is control it from the mobile app they provide, and then you receive over-the-air updates that add new coins and new features on a consistent basis. Kind of like how Tesla does over-the-air updates and updates the car software. Just you're updating your coin mine. Consumer mining made easy. That's right. Go to coinmine.com, tell them Pomp sent you, and thank me later.
As many of you know, crypto investors store their digital assets on exchanges or in cold storage for long-term safekeeping. However, this strategy doesn't help them grow their investment holdings or build overall wealth. With the new BlockFi interest account, users can now securely store their Bitcoin or Ether at BlockFi and receive 6% annual interest paid monthly in cryptocurrency. 6% is an absurdly high rate. It's the best rate in the industry. I highly suggest you go check out BlockFi.com/pomp. Again, that's BlockFi.com/pomp to sign up and start earning crypto today.
Anthony Pompliano is a partner at Morgan Creek Digital. All opinions expressed by Pomp or his guests on this podcast are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Morgan Creek Digital or Morgan Creek Capital Management. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Pomp as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his opinion. This podcast is for informational purposes only.
All right, guys. Bang, bang. I've got Spencer in the house. Man, it's going to be fun. We're going to talk a lot of sports. We're going to talk some crypto, Bitcoin. Somehow you're in a Tron. We'll get to that in a second. And then you're one of the first athletes to try to tokenize the contract, which I think a lot of people are paying attention to. So thanks for coming to do this.
Thank you.
All right. Background. Most people know you as an NBA player, but you know, you got a life before that. So what did you do before you got to the NBA?
I grew up in Los Angeles, California. My mom was a teacher. She has a PhD from USC. Was a professor there for a minute. My dad's into real estate. My brother's a genius. He may be the smartest in the family. Went to school, played basketball.
Only played basketball or played other sports too?
Nah, I played football as well, and I also skied.
So you skied?
Yeah, I know.
In LA?
Yeah, man. I was actually pretty good though. It's crazy. Not a great swimmer, but I can ski a little bit.
All right. Wait, hold on. We got to talk about this for a second. High school?
No. So I never went competitively, well, really competitively in football and skiing because at high school, my dad made me choose.
Made a decision. Yeah. And it was more like avoid injuries or more just focus?
Yeah, well, like a little bit of both. He was like, you know, if you want to really do this thing, because, you know, I wasn't like highly ranked or anything. And I told my dad all the time, like, I want to be in the NBA. I want to be in the NBA. Mm-hmm. So he was like, well, if you really want to do it, then focus on it and do it, you know. And well, I have to credit him, obviously, for me being here, of course, because if he had tore down my dreams at that stage, like, there's no way I'd have been here. So him boosting me in that confidence, I mean, obviously, it required me to give up football and skiing. But you know, I'm here, so.
I don't know too many kids, especially in LA, that want to be skiers, so basketball is a good choice. You made it.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, and then you went to Colorado, right?
Yep.
All right.
My final two choices for college were Colorado and Harvard. I chose Colorado, another basketball decision. I wanted to go to Pac-12. I was mad about, you know, feeling a little bit under-recruited and being a West Coast kid. I wanted to, I guess, have some vengeance and go to the NBA.
It worked, right?
Yeah, it did.
All right, so one of the things I want to get out of the way right away is you got accepted to go to Harvard and got recruited there, so you're not a dummy, right? Talk a little bit about how you did academically and kind of SAT and stuff.
Yeah, you know, going into my sophomore year in high school, I was trying to get into, like, some program, or some program was, like, recruiting me, so I had to take the SAT. I got a 1,400 out of 1,600, so that carried me through high school.
As a sophomore?
Yeah, like going into my sophomore year in high school. And then, you know, now when it came calling, and I had like I think my GPA was only in like the mid threes at the end of the day, because I kind of let it all go to the wayside when I started really rolling basketball-wise. I'm not even going to lie to you, but, you know, it was good enough to get into Harvard because of the SAT and you know, the
basketball GPA stuff. Yeah. Well, and part of this, the reason why I want to make sure that people understand this is it's not a surprise what you're trying to do now, because you're not just a single, you know, kind of faceted person around, hey, I play basketball. There's plenty of people who do that. Those usually end up being the kind of the horror stories, I think, of just like they don't have skills afterwards. You had a lot of options, right? So you could have done a lot of different things. All right, so you go to Colorado, and then you tore your ACL, I think it was, right?
Yeah, ACL, both meniscuses, and my MCL. That was January 2014, and then, you know, I declared in April and went to the draft anyway.
All right, because this is one of the cooler parts of your whole story is I actually remember when you tore the ACL.
Really?
I do not remember the whole story of then that's when you got drafted. I thought a whole year had gone by.
No,
I was looking it up before we did this, I was like, wait a minute. You tore it, then declared, and got drafted in what, second round, right?
Second round, 38. We talked about not being highly ranked and all that stuff. So I go there freshman year, have a solid year, followed up sophomore year, have a really good year. We go to the tournament. I was on draft boards. You know, they suggested I come back because I was going to be, like, late first, early second. So, you know, the way we were playing, we were about, like, 15th in the country. We were rolling. Mm-hmm. Junior was actually phenomenal at the time. Only had a couple losses, and I was supposed to be a lottery pick, all that stuff. So it was working. Unfortunately, I got hurt. But, you know, I mean, I was ready. I wanted to go.
So some of it's got to be, like, mentality-wise, you're like, hey, I'm ready to go play in the NBA. I want to go play against these guys.
Yeah.
Was there any piece of it, like, you're already hurt? It wasn't like, hey, if I come back and I get hurt again, I just won't get, you know, there's the possibility of, like, falling further and further, or potentially not getting drafted at some point? Or was it just, it was more offensive and like, hey, I want to go play, let's go do this?
Yeah, it was more offensive, just from my mindset, right? Like, when I started attacking recovery, and they started saying, like, you know, I was recovering well and all those other things, that's when I really was like, okay, I can really do this, I can really declare, you know. Prior to that, you know, I heard all the doom and gloom stuff because I was supposed to play for a year. You know, it wasn't just ACL, it was both meniscus and the MCL. You know, they're over here like, hey, look, your meniscus was pretty, like, trash, so this could get kind of dicey. Like, I don't know exactly what's going to happen. So in the midst of that fear, that's when I was more so thinking about coming back to school and trying to, you know, at the very least graduate and all that stuff. But, you know, I had a conversation with my mom. I think it was the morning. It might have been the second day after I got hurt. You know, I woke up and I was actually crying. And I talked to her. And this should be a Nike commercial, honestly, even though I'm not with Nike. But, you know, I was talking to her and I was like, Ma, like, you know, like, why this happened, like, all this stuff. Like, you know, I still want to go to the NBA. And she's like, you know, like, relax. And I'm like, what? And she's like, what do you want to do? And I was like, Ma, I want to go to the league. She's like, no, Spencer, like, what do you want to do? I said, like, I want to go to the league. She said, then do it. Just like that. Then do it. I'm crying. You know, I'm kind of in my feelings right now. I'm a, 20-year-old kid, I think, at the time, who just apparently had his dreams taken away. And so I'm tripping. And she's just like
why?
Like, why? Like, bro, are you as good as you think you are? Then do it.
It's funny how moms specifically, they know when to kind of be soft and you know, sharpen that, or dull the edge a little bit.
Yep.
But then the exact opposite, every once in a while they're like, hey, get your shit together, let's go.
And that's the funniest part. My dad is always like on me.
Yeah.
And in that moment, he was the soft one. He was like, I'm sorry, man. Like, I'm so sorry you got hurt.
You're going to be okay.
Mom was like, boy, if you don't just do it, like, are you good? And I was like, yes. She's like, then go.
It's crazy. And so what were you being told going into the draft in terms of, hey, you're hurt, you're recovering nicely, but was there an understanding that you could fall completely out of the draft to the later round? Like, what was
No.
Pretty much knew you were going to be second round.
Yeah, once we kind of cleared the first couple of hurdles of, like, recovering, it was like, okay, he's going to be fine. We don't know necessarily whether it's 7 months, 8 months, 10 Got months, it. Whatever, but we know he's going to be fine. Then it was more so like, okay, he's at worst, like, mid-second.
Okay.
So it was like 45 or so was, like, like how worst far case. They thought like I was gonna fall. And so I was like, if I'm okay with that and I'm the player I think I am and I think I can play my way into, you know, better prospects after I'm already in the league, then let's go.
Yeah. Well, and the difference between, let's call it 45 and top 10 pick is what money out of the draft?
Oh shoot, it's quite big. A bit. Yeah, because when I came into the league, the minimum was still around like 500,000 or 600,000. It wasn't like 1.5 like it is now. So, you know, a top 10 pick probably was in the 2.5-3 million range, and my minimum was probably, you know, 600,000, something like that. So quite a big difference. But, you know, the benefit was, and obviously in trying to be optimistic, if I have a 1 or 2 year deal and I play well, then I get to, you know, my next contract quicker, whereas, you know, a first round pick is going to be 4 or 5 years until they get to their next contract.
For sure. At what point after the league, you know, do you come across Bitcoin, crypto, blockchain, like it's just such like a, especially because you didn't just do it, you know, yesterday, right? So it's kind of been something that you've been looking at. Like, how does that happen?
So I actually have a friend in finance.
Okay,
works at a bank. He told me about it in 2014.
Early.
He told me about it. Yeah, right when I got drafted, he was like, "You need to put some of your money in Bitcoin." I'm like,
"No way!"
Right when I got drafted, the problem is I'm listening to all these horror stories. And I'm like, "I'm a second round pick. I've only been in the league 1 or 2 years.
Yep.
I can't, bro. You know?
Yep.
I wish I had a
But now he's probably doing his victory lap,
yeah,
right?
You know, no, he definitely is. So circle back to about 2017, when I get back to the Nets. You know, I've already made, or not get back to the Nets, but get to the Nets.
Because you got drafted by the Pistons.
Yeah.
Then went Bulls, then Nets.
So Bulls was only for a cup of coffee. Like, it was literally
a cup of coffee.
Yeah, no, I was only at the Bulls for like a hot second. Like, it was just there to say hi. That's it.
Take a quick Instagram in the stadium.
Yeah, that was it. Like, I took a couple of snapshots in a jersey and then I was gone. But yeah, so basically it's 2 years in Detroit and then 3 years in Brooklyn. It's pretty much, it breaks down pretty evenly like that.
Got it.
But yeah, so I already had a little bit of money, and then, you know, being in the D League for that kind of, or like Chicago D League experience that summer in 2017, kind of, you know, looking at other stuff and branching out and expanding my mind, because it's like, well, shoot, I'm out the league. Like, I have to, you know, not just, you know, I mean, I had full faith and confidence I was getting back in, but you just kind of take time to, you know, expand your mind a little bit, even kind of be a little more focused on your family and all those other things. And so that's when, you know, I came back across it, had a couple conversations with my guy. He was like, look, do it. So I was fortunate enough to catch, you know,
most of 17.
Caught the bull run. So that's when it was like, what? But at this time, I still don't understand. You know, I'm just listening. And so, you know, he tells me about Bitcoin. I look up a couple of other, like, top 10, top 25. Mm-hmm. The reason why I got into Tron, right? So, I'm just going to keep it
100%. Come on, let's go.
So, it's like, oh, the CEO is Justin Sun. Mm-hmm. He's tied to Jack Ma. And then, so, I know about Alibaba and stuff. I'm like, well, if he's tied to Jack Ma.
Yep.
Like, let's put a little. And remember, at this time, we're talking about, like, Vegas gambling money. We're talking about several thousand dollars. Like, we're not talking about, like,
it's not a true investment. You know that you're speculating.
This is speculating at the time. So, and this is why, you know, even though I caught the Bitcoin bull run, it's not like it changed my life forever. It was I'm getting into it, I'm learning about it. And so, you know, when the bull run happens and the subsequent crash, you know, you start reading about, like, how does a market swing this much beyond the fact that it's in its infant stages? Like, I want to know why. But then also, even when it does crash, why is there still over $200 billion in here? Why are people still in this? What does it truly mean? What is the technology behind it? And that's when you start reading about it. That's when you start understanding blockchain. That's when you're like, oh, I understand why Bitcoin is king now, you know, in terms of, like, censorship resistance and all those other things. And so, you know, then It's like, wait a second, DeFi is a real thing. Like, mm-hmm. this can open up a completely new world. And that's when all of this starts to begin. That's yeah. when it all starts.
Well, and there, I forget who said this, and I should remember it because I want to give them credit for it. But they said, I came for the money and I stayed for the money. But they're saying, like, I came basically from a capitalistic, I wanted to get rich and I was greedy.
Yeah.
But then when I learned what money really was, I learned what Bitcoin was, that's why I stayed, exactly. right? And so the price does bring a huge influx of people in and gets them to pay attention.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I'd be lying if I told you that wasn't part of, like, my journey and my story. Mm-hmm. It's just that, like, you know, now once you're in it, now once you read about it and all that other stuff, you're like, whoa.
For
this,
sure.
This is real. This is something that's different.
What's the general sentiment within the league of, like, true, like, crypto, right? So Bitcoin, Ethereum, like that type of stuff that we would consider more the larger cap stuff.
Crypto in the league in a lot of ways is Bitcoin. Like, if you say cryptocurrency, it's just Bitcoin.
People
don't really understand you know, the difference.
Other than Kobe speaking at the Tron conference.
Yeah, I mean, you know, probably got paid to do it. Yeah, so,
of course.
You
know, that's fine. You know, hey.
Yeah. Listen, here's
the way I look at it is if you go down the line, I can think of a lot of celebrities, athletes, musicians, etc., who have done a whole variation of them, right?
Yeah.
They're getting paid.
For
it's
sure.
the same thing, just like
for
it's
sure.
a brand,
it's
just like everything else.
Yeah. It's an endorsement deal.
All right, so most people are interested in Bitcoin specifically. And is this like, hey, I talked to my financial advisor and we're building a portfolio of assets and, like, we got a little bit of Bitcoin in there? Or is this more of like my financial advisor told me I'm crazy for doing this, but I got some, like, you know, play money and I'm doing it with the play money, not with the financial advisor kind of money?
Oh, nah. Like, so that, excuse me. That's the thing. When I sit down with my, like, business managers and stuff, like, I tell them, you know, what I personally have a passion for.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's predominantly Bitcoin and real estate. Like, so I'm like, hey guys, like, you know, I understand, like, where, like, some of this other stuff is, but these are, like, the two areas of focus mm-hmm. that I really believe in.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, let's optimize.
For
yeah,
those.
let's drive like my capital towards these areas.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So, you know, obviously real estate is not going anywhere. You know,
yep.
the market can go up and down, all that stuff, just like any other market. But, you know, people are going to need places to live. We're not making any more land. Mm-hmm. I'm a big believer in it. So, you know.
It's something that you're interested in, it sounds like, and you understand.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's like, hey, look, I'd rather go do that than go exactly. speculate on some stocks that I have no clue about. Like,
there
that actually
go.
May be more risky than
there
something
you
understand.
There you go. And so those are two areas that I'm predominantly focused on, besides, like, the entrepreneur endeavors, but
yeah.
predominantly just from a personal perspective, real estate, Bitcoin.
So one of the things that I've had the fortunate kind of experience to learn from a lot of these guys
yeah.
is what I'll just call, like, personal finance within professional sports. And
yeah.
it's you hear the horror stories, right? Hey, guys go broke and all that
yeah.
kind of stuff. But there's even, I think it's Intersection Capital, you know, they made a list of, like, the 50 things that athletes who stay rich made.
Yeah.
Right. And I think I heard Patrick O'Shaughnessy talking about this with one of the guys. And it's things like, hey, they got rims that are 22 or less. Right, you know,
yeah.
they wear condoms, right? like the guy had this whole list, and it's a list of not don't do this. It's a list of do this, right?
Yeah.
And kind of the positive
yeah.
affirmation and the, like, hey, here's the playbook, rather
exactly.
than the, like, don't do this other stuff, because by nature athletes will, oh, I can't do something.
Yeah,
you're not looking.
Play with that fire, yeah.
Right,
for
and
sure.
so do you feel like that's a lot of the conversation in the locker room is around finance, investments, entrepreneurs, like all that kind of stuff, or
yeah.
is it just more sports, music, culture, and there's not so much of the finance and business?
I would say over the last, well, I've only been in the league for 5 years, but I would say even in that 5 years, you've seen more of a shift in the guys being more open about finances,
mm-hmm.
what they feel about different markets, what they're exploring. You know, I mean, I think guys are still very scared about cryptocurrency in general, which
yep.
is understandable due to the crash and them not understanding, like, blockchain and stuff like that. But, you know, talking about real estate or talking about VC, which is very mm-hmm. in vogue right now, is definitely popping up in the locker rooms for sure.
Mm-hmm. Is there a competition on who got into what deal? Like, hey man, I dropped 20 on you last night,
man.
And I also got into Uber before you.
not that I've heard.
Okay.
I mean, maybe there's some, but not that I know of.
All right. And then before we get into some of the tokenized contract stuff, like,
yeah.
just walk us through, what is a normal day in season look for you guys? Because I don't think people really understand, like, how
yeah.
In-depth some of this is that you've got to do in order to be ready to play every
oh,
night.
Oh, boy. You know, Monday through Sunday, like, that doesn't exist during season. There's three different types of days.
Okay.
There's practice day.
Okay.
Game day.
Mm-hmm.
And then like your light workout day.
Okay.
That's it.
I didn't hear a rest day.
Either, yeah, so, no. Okay. So that is your rest day. Like the light workout day is your rest day. That's when you go in, you know, maybe you get like an hour's worth of a lift or some shots and, you know, you get a good stretch in, hit the sauna or something like that. And then you're out in 2-3 hours or something like that.
Okay.
That's your rest day. But, you know, a practice day, I mean, you know, practice is going to start at 10. You got to be there by 8:30 to eat. You know, then you're going to have like your correctives that you have to do in the weight room. Practice goes from 10 to 12:30. Then you got, you know, 12:30 to 1, 12:30 to 1:15, a lift. Then you're going to do like your treatment, which is going to take you to 2:30, 2:45. Then, you know, you're going to have to do your recovery, which is going to involve like cold tub and whatnot. Yep. So you probably in there from, it's almost a 9 to 5. You're in there from 8:30 to 4. You know,
yeah, yeah,
roughly. So,
and you're not sitting at a desk, right?
No. You're not sitting at a desk. Like this involves running, jumping, playing basketball, all that good stuff, lifting weights, like et cetera. So, you know, it's a very involved job. Like it's mm-hmm. You know, it's fun because it's our dreams, and so you know it's different in that capacity from us enjoying it,
mm-hmm.
especially like our reward being the games and being able to compete and do things that we love. But like people thinking that we just kind of lay in bed all day and then, you know, show up and drop 20 and then go home and kick it. Like that's not how it is.
What about game day?
Game day. So I've been fortunate enough for the last like year or so with the Brooklyn Nets, they've been pretty light on shoot arounds, but okay. usually you kind of have this light practice of sorts mm-hmm. called a shoot around, you know, from 10 to 11:30 or so mm-hmm. in the morning. And then you show back up to the gym probably 5 o'clock for a 7:30 game. You have one of those kind of light lifts, 20 minutes or so, another round of shooting for about 30 minutes, and then you have another like treatment round for another 30 minutes. So it's about an hour and a half worth of work that you put in prior
before
to
the game.
Yeah, and then you play the game. And after the game, you know, depending upon whether you're injured or whether you're working on something specific or if you didn't play, then you have conditioning, right? So let's say you normally play 25, 30 minutes, but that night you played 10, they may make you run on the treadmill for the other 15, 20 that you didn't
really?
Play. You know? Yeah, so it's pretty involved. Like it's not a joke. You know, if you
They're data-driven on all this stuff and really paying attention
oh, yeah.
to
– Oh, yeah. They track, you know, loads and all that stuff. They have, mm-hmm. like, metrics for it. There's second spectrum in the arenas, like the cameras track like how many miles are ran. They approximate that load based upon like your force input into the ground and how you run specifically.
It's crazy.
When people try to think that this is just like, oh,
going to the backyard shooting.
Yeah, like it's nothing like that. And so it's all data analytics driven. Like this is a business, you know, if the NBA is pulling in billions of dollars of revenue, right, and the asset is the one driving that force, then they're going to try to know every single piece they can about that specific player, that specific person, just like any other big business.
Yeah, because I remember, I think it was beginning of preseason this year or maybe last year or something, the video of James Harden working out after the game, right? And it was like, hey, the dude just, you know, dropped 40 points or whatever, and now he's in the gym. And it wasn't like he was stretching, right?
He was working out. Yeah.
And so I guess I'd never realized how common that is.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Nah, that's not out of the ordinary.
All right. And the last question on this, I just read an article about sleep deprivation.
Mm-hmm.
And they're basically talking about, you know, the NFL has CTE and concussions and all this kind of stuff. 10 years ago, nobody talked about. Now has kind of become the thing that everyone's focused on.
For sure.
And this article was like a 2-year study where they were showing like, look, man, these NBA players are not sleeping what you think. They're not getting 8, 9, 10 hours of sleep. They're, you know, getting done with the game at 11. They get on a flight at 12:30. They land at 2.
Yeah.
They, you know, get to the hotel by 3. But when are they sleeping?
Yeah.
And that's for 82 games, right?
82 games in like a 220-day period or something like that.
So a real problem.
Yeah. Nah, for sure.
What do players do to try to get over that or kind of?
You got
to
be a big napper, you know, or you have to just be a guy that is fine with that. You know, there are some guys that are fine with 4 hours of sleep, and, and that's, they're just one of those highly functioning people that does that consistently. I myself am not that guy. I get cranky, I get grumpy, all those things. So, you know, I'm gonna get my nap during the afternoon.
Got it. All right, because I think Kobe used to do the everyday man or whatever, right, where you sleep like an hour and a half, then like an hour, then an hour. It's like some crazy shit.
I've heard all types of crazy Kobe stories. So like, you gotta ask him on that one.
Yeah. The only two stories I got for you that just are seared in my brain is he called the trainer at like 3:30. Trainer went home after the workout and then came back at 10 or 11 and was like, "Damn, Kobe, you got here early." He was like, "I never left."
Oh, the Olympics one? Yeah, that was true. That was true.
And then the other one is Jason Williams was at a game, the pre-game shoot-around, and he got there, and Kobe wouldn't leave the court until Jason Williams left, and Jason was like, "Hey, man, why were you there for so long?" He's like, "I wouldn't leave until you left."
Yeah.
So it's a mentality.
Nah, he's wired different. Like, there's a lot of crazy dudes in the league in terms of that competitive nature, but, like, he's a little different. Yeah, he's a little different.
He's all over Instagram now with his, like, 12-year-old or 13-year-old daughter's basketball game.
Being a dad.
All right, so let's get into tokenizing the contract, right? Before we kind of talk about what you're doing, let's just go over the mechanics of how NBA contracts work. Yeah. So what's the structure like, guaranteed, non-guaranteed, and then how do most players get paid? Is it per game? Is it once a week, twice a week? You know, how does it actually work from a mechanic standpoint?
Yeah, so every contract kind of follows this uniform, it's called a uniform player contract, right?
Okay.
You tend to get paid bi-monthly, so, you know, first and 15th, over a 24-month period. That can vary. You know, some guys can get it as low as like a 6 month. Sometimes you can get certain advances or whatever, and then sometimes you can have like different incentives into a contract, whether you know, shoot a certain percentage or whatever. But all those things are very individual to that player. And so, you know, the uniform player contract just has, like, the standard protections, right, in terms of, like, the guarantees, et cetera. And then, you know, you kind of write in anything that, you know, disputes those guarantees. So if it's a player option or team option or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. But typically, you know, if you have, you know, that set guaranteed contract, then, you know, whether it's death, disability, or injury or whatever, then you're covered. So that's, you know, the biggest difference between us and, like, football, right, where, like, you know, once my contract is good for that year or 2 years or whatever, if I go outside and get hit by a bus, like, you know, I'm my family's at least going to be good, right?
Yep.
Like,
yeah.
I won't be, but my family will be.
Got it. And after you sign the contract, right? So most players, they've got an agent. Agent negotiates the contract. You got your bank or whatever, right? Yep. Those contracts are getting paid to you personally, to like an LLC. Like, how do most players mechanically engage with the contract? Are they signing it personally or is it through some sort of like legal structure?
Yeah, so you
or
can
maybe
do
it's
it.
Different.
Well, you can technically do it either way, right? It's as long as what the Nets are paying to is considered to be you.
Got
so
it. Okay.
If it's you or a pass-through entity, right, that you wholly own or whatever, then it's fine,
then it's
right?
Fine.
Yeah, it's like you can't send it to like a corporation that is like split or something of that nature, or like send
you
it
and
to
I can't start a company
or,
and you sign your contract.
Yeah,
and do
exactly,
it
exactly. So that's the whole big thing about assignment, right? As long as they are paying you, then that's
then
it, and that's why then obviously the buck then stops after that.
Yep, got it. All right, and so at what point do you come up with this? Frankly, probably crazy idea at first that becomes reality, but you're gonna tokenize the contract. Like, what did that mean to you? What was the idea, genesis, etc.?
You know, I've actually been on kind of a journey of like intellectual property rights, brand, fan engagement, like all those things in terms of like recognizing what our power is as the asset, right? Like, if you look at whatever permutation of this you want to look at it, right, whether it's you know, the NBA or other big brands that, you know, use our likeness for whatever it is. Typically speaking, and it's a little bit different with like a Nike, obviously, because they have their own brand status and their own product that they kind of really push, and they're a billion-dollar company on their own, regardless of LeBron James. But in the NBA sense, right, like their broker, you know, the fan determines the value, but the players are what bring the value. They're the asset.
All right, so this is a really important concept because you said this, and I've never heard anyone describe it this way. The NBA is a broker between the fans and the player.
Yeah. Their job is to obviously bring the fans and the players closer together, make their interactions as seamless and easy as possible, and they do a phenomenal job of it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, one of the best leagues in the world. If you look at it globally, I mean, we're second to soccer, I believe, right now.
Wow.
Like, growing in terms of, like, I know the NFL still brings in, like, obviously super high amount of revenue because they can have 100,000 plus fans and we can only have like, you know, 10 to 20 in an arena. But in terms of just kind of the growth and like expanding globally and engaging in those other markets and bases, like I believe NBA is now second to soccer in terms of its like, you know, growth and its projections. So yeah,
that makes sense though.
Yeah, doing a phenomenal job, right? But at the end of the day, the inherent value is, you know,
the players.
It's the asset, right? Like if you drop the Brooklyn Nets logo in the middle of the street right here, like, you know, people might stop, they might look, they might go, oh, that's weird, right? If you drop LeBron James or Kevin Durant or Kyrie Irving in the middle of this street right here,
or Spencer,
you know, I get a couple people, but you drop one of those people out there, there's a flock. If you tell people on social media, hey, they're going to be playing a basketball game, LeBron's going to play a basketball game, or KD is going to play a one-on-one game in the middle of the street right here, you'll get thousands and thousands and thousands
of people. The cops have to come.
Yeah, so that's where the value is, you know. And so any asset, right, has its own asset class. And then that's kind of the real genesis of this whole thing, you know. And we, just like an Apple or just like a, you know, whatever other stock or company or whatever, can kind of set the terms of what they feel their valuation is. Obviously, people kind of, you know, rate them and have a theoretical value attached to them because of the revenue that they generate and the products that they build, et cetera. And it's much the same way with us, right? We have a somewhat of a value, right? Like when you look at us, you can, and you look at our contracts, or you look at, you know, our endorsement deals or whatever, you say, okay, he's roughly in the $40 million range, or he's roughly in the $50 million range, or whatever it is. There really is no difference when you look at it in that manner. And so as me, the company, me, Spencer, me, the asset, I can offer whatever product I want to my fans based upon whatever I feel my value is.
Yep.
And it's on them to determine the market. It's not on the NBA to determine the market. It's on them, right?
Yep.
If I offer a BS product, then they won't buy it, right? Yep. Like it's really that simple. It's kind of the same way like I told you before. If I went to the bank right now and told them, you know, everybody kind of knows what my contract is. I don't know if, you know, via NBA rules I can say the exact number. If I go to the bank right
ballpark?
Now.
Ballpark?
Yeah, ballpark in the 30s.
Okay.
So if I go to a bank right now.
By the way, I got to throw this out there. From a skier in LA to 30 mil, you're doing all right. Go ahead.
Thank you, brother. Yeah, no, but if I go to a bank right now, I'm saying that, hey, guys, I want to buy a $100 million house. They're going to look at me and say, look, you're crazy. Your contract, after we take out taxes and do all this other stuff, there's no way. Like, you just
won't have the money.
Yeah, you want the money. Like, it's impossible. But if I say I want to buy a $5 million house, they'll be like, okay, that makes sense. You could probably pay it off in a couple years, you know, if you so chose. Or you could carry the mortgage 30 years if you wanted. Like, it would completely be up to you.
Yep.
And it's very much the same way. Like, I set terms for a product that I'm willing to offer as Spencer Dinwiddie, the asset. And either fans will say, hey, we like those terms, they're favorable. Or they'll say, no, we don't think those terms are favorable. And they won't buy in. And then the asset, or the product, rather, either succeeds or fails based upon that right there. It really has nothing to do with the league, which is why, you know, it was so disappointing to hear their stance.
Hold on. So just so those who haven't been paying attention, you basically said, all right, I'm going to be, I think it's the first athlete, right, in the four major professional sports to tokenize my contract.
Yeah.
And the mechanism in which you're going to do that is you're going to play.
Yeah.
You have a guaranteed contract, right? And so as long as you don't die, you're getting paid, right, for the most part. The league is going to pay a pass-through entity that you have, right?
Pay me.
They're going to pay you. And then what you do with your money is up to you.
Bingo.
And what you said to me, which just made it clear as day to me, was they don't tell you what car to buy.
Yeah.
They don't tell you what house to buy.
Yeah.
They frankly don't tell you what casino to go gamble at if you wanted to
there
do
you
that.
Go.
You can do whatever you want with your money.
Exactly.
Right? And what you've done is you've structured a offering, right, that allows fans to enjoy the product that you're presenting.
Exactly.
And your point is, whatever the terms of that product are, the fans are going to determine whether they agree with the terms or not.
Exactly. They're going to determine whether it's favorable. So if I sit here and say, you know what, I'm not going to give you any interest. If they say cool, then that would be on them, right? If I say, hey, I'm going to give you a little bit of interest or a lot of interest, or I'm going to set this variable rate, or I'm going to say like, hey, we should do it this way. As long as the fans determine that the market or that the product is
desirable.
Yeah. Then they'll buy it, you know. And if I want to set those terms the way I want to set those terms, then I'm fine with it, clearly, because I set the terms, right? Because I am the company, right, that or the personal entity that set those terms. So really, that's like I said, the most frustrating part about it, because it really has nothing to do with them. Me sitting down and saying, hey, NBA, this is what I want to do, was merely out of courtesy, because I view it as something that can be beneficial if we partner. I view it as something that if the NBA wants to be a part of it, it could offer a ton of benefit for them, because every owner in the NBA, they want 100%, you know, control over management decisions, et cetera. They want all of that power, but they want 51% capital control and exposure. There's no way you go to another billionaire and tell them that. There's no way you sell 49% of the team to a billionaire and tell them that you can't have any control, you can't do anything, you can't, like, you can't decide what player we get, you can't have one of your guys on the executive board, nothing. They don't go for that. Or they go for it and then they try to institute some type of takeover later. Like, that's that's, it's just one of the two ways it's going
to
happen.
So when you announced this, you had already talked to the league or no?
No. So when I had announced this the very first time, I had talked to the Players Association. Players Association was cool with it.
And they thought it was a good idea, generally cool okay with it.
You know, you're not doing anything wrong, boom. And then the conversation with the league, obviously, we're scheduled to start after the Players Association. We talked about it a little bit. Well, technically it got leaked, and so that's kind of what shifted timelines a little bit. But yeah, I mean, it
was. What was their reaction? Because the league was not as static about this.
No, they just said no. You know, and then I was like, but why? And they were like, well, you can't give your contract to fans. I was like, that's not what I'm doing.
Yep.
And then I was like, so why can't I do it? And they just said no. And I was like,
that kind of. There's very few times in life where grown men get told no with no explanation, and it's usually when they were younger.
Yeah.
So their parents, their teachers,
that's,
like
that's exactly how it felt. It felt like, you know, they were trying to be my father or my teacher or something, and it's no because I said no, and I'm just simply sitting there saying, why? Like, if you can explain to me why I cannot do it, if you can explain to me legally why this is wrong, then I will drop everything right now. I promise you. I don't want to go to war with you. You guys are great at what you do. I've loved my time being a partner with the NBA and playing in the NBA. I'm not going to try to deliberately cut my career short or anger you guys to take action against me. So if you guys can tell me why, I'll stop. But if you guys are just going to sit here and tell me no, like I'm a child, and you know, get on the phone and just tell me, like, I don't know.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but would it be fair to categorize your approach as trying to create a win-win between? Well, really, it's a win for the fans, it's a win for you, everybody. It's a win for the league, it's a win for the team.
Like, everybody.
It really aligns interests in a very unique way, and it sounds like the league's reaction of just kind of no, which, because I think that's what most fans have gotten from the media, right? It's just the league said no. If there's not the explanation, then it kind of leaves everyone asking, like, why don't you guys like this?
Exactly, and that's the thing. Like, if you look at it, right? So the NBA right now, the biggest thing that is going to be at a premium, not just this year but years going forward, is fan engagement and getting people to continue to watch TV, right? Because they signed the historic TV deal, but technically, like, on TV viewership is down, right? Like,
oh, interesting. Okay.
In terms of, like, the metrics they wanted to hit and stuff like that. Now, we're still growing. We're still doing great things, making a bunch of money, all that good stuff, right? But just looking at the TV deal compared to how people are consuming media, because people are getting highlights and small clips here and subscribing to this over here and doing all these things. So it's not affecting the NBA necessarily in terms of the total bottom line, but it's affecting some of the TV companies. So they're a little bit upset about it, right? So if you can continue to drive fan engagement, it only continues to help you, right? And this, whether it's personal player fan engagement or team fan engagement from them being able to own fractionalized shares of the team, you're getting fans to feel a part of your global system, your global entity, right? So there is no downside for the NBA because the fans can't sue you, but they are now more entrenched in the NBA. Now,
okay, go ahead.
And then the other two pieces, the fan, right? Depending upon the offering that you choose to participate in, there may not be much downside, if any, right? The way we structured mine was super safe. Now, we don't know how much the fan can make in terms of interest. We will see, like, based upon, you know, revenue that I can generate. But the protections are there, so that's an extremely safe offering.
Skirt, skirt!
Want to know who has the best URL? Crypto.com. That's right, Crypto.com. They're a crypto platform with one goal, motherfucking mass adoption. That's why we're all here. We're trying to get crypto in every wallet. Crypto.com is helping people do that through buying, earning, lending, and card payment. Everything you could want at Crypto.com. Go help your boy out. Tell him Pomp sent you. Download the app or visit Crypto.com. Pomp's got you, always.
Ever wanted to get into mining and didn't know how? Don't worry, your boy Pomp's got you. Everybody got some electricity and Wi-Fi. All you got to do is go to coinmine.com. You buy a coin mine. It's like an Xbox or a PlayStation that helps you turn your electricity into Bitcoin. That's right. You purchase it. It shows up at your doorstep. You pull it out of the box. You plug it in, connect to your Wi-Fi. 5 minutes or less, you're mining Bitcoin. All you have to do is control it from the mobile app they provide, and then you receive over-the-air updates that add new coins and new features on a consistent basis. Kind of like how Tesla does over-the-air updates and updates the car software. Just you're updating your coin mine. Consumer mining made easy. That's right. Go to coinmine.com, tell them Pomp sent you, and thank me later.
One more word from our sponsor, BlockFi. Their new interest account allows you to securely deposit your Bitcoin or Ether at BlockFi and receive 6% annual interest paid monthly in cryptocurrency. This rate actually compounds, so you receive a 6.2% APY, which is very attractive given the alternatives. So you can actually take your Bitcoin, you can deposit it with BlockFi, and get paid an interest rate of 6% in return. Go check out BlockFi.com/pomp. Again, BlockFi.com/pomp to sign up and start earning interest on your crypto today.
And it's very clearly articulated. One of the things, as I was looking more at what you're doing, like there's regulatory oversight, right? In the sense of you can't just go do this without anyone paying attention.
Exactly.
And part of that regulatory oversight is transparency, clarity of the, you know, kind of the structure. Like, there's more thought into this than like you sitting at home and just being like, let me just fire off a tweet and like
1000%, 1000%. We spent just about 10 months building this. You know, we put it on blockchain for a reason besides the transparency and also cutting fees, just in terms of like the scalability of where we're trying to go in terms of creating an asset class. Obviously it makes sense. I mean, like I said, we Reg D, you know, we specifically went that way because and with accredited investors first, we wanted to go Reg A plus. We wanted to shrink every token down to a dollar and you know, make it, you know, accessible for everybody. But we understood the complications with that. And so, you know, we literally took every single like step that you could possibly take to be as careful as possible. And then when it was time to package it and take it to the table and say, hey guys, we found something that's not only beneficial for you guys, we found something that's beneficial for the fans, and we even found something that's beneficial for the players, right? Which is another point that, you know, to touch on. There's a way in when you do things like this that you can immediately lock money. So you can create reserves or you can create trust, et cetera, right? So you can make sure that a guy doesn't spend money. If you have a guy that's, let's say a financial advisor comes and says, hey, I have a guy that's, he's shown over the first 3 years he's not very fiscally responsible, and now he's got a 5-year deal, let's say it's 50 million or something, right? I want to lock 40 of that away right now. I'll give him 10, he can spend it, whatever, but we're going to lock 40, and we're going to make sure that he can only spend the interest on this 40 for the next 15 years. You can do that.
Yeah. Well, it goes back to the kind of principles of DeFi or Bitcoin and kind of software, or you know, I call it like algorithmic finance, right, or automated finance. Is you can code things in that no matter how upset you get, no matter how, you know, desperate you are, no matter how drunk you get, right? I mean, all these different things. Doesn't matter. Exactly. Software has no, it's not going
to
listen.
There you go. And the interest just kicks it out to you. And as you make interest, you get to spend that money. But you know that through hell or high water, unless there's like some catastrophic event, that money is not unlocking. You are never going to go broke. You are fine.
It's kind of like, people who listen to podcasts know my favorite basketball player growing up was Allen Iverson.
Okay.
Right? He just hit me with a crossover, and, you know, you're just like, hey, man, that dude's real, right?
Yeah.
And he is actually one of the negative side effects of being a professional athlete, right? He's gone broke for all intents and purposes. But the saving grace he has is one of the contracts he signed, I think, with Reebok, right? I think it's like when he turns 55, it's going to unlock, you know, 30, 35 million bucks, whatever it is. It's a similar mechanism. Now, we don't know, you know, does he get it leveraged? You know, there's all these kind of things that could have happened. Yeah. But that mechanism of there is almost like a safety net for him, right? Yeah. Where he had money locked away till a certain time period, and it was far enough out where, like, he's probably much more mature now than he was when he was in his 20s and 30s. That's been happening for a long time. You know, Bobby Bonilla, but he's still getting paid by the Mets, like 20 years later.
Yeah. And there's – it just opens up a completely different line of flexibility to these players that can essentially do whatever they want, you know, with their money, and can have all these areas to be responsible and to do different things. You know, obviously with mine, I'm putting a lot in Bitcoin, and I'm also putting some in gold too, to kind of show like the differences between, you know, quote unquote digital gold and physical gold and all that stuff. But that's a very personal thing. But yeah, like, you, I feel like what we created is something that literally everybody can win. And that is like by far the most disappointing part about the no without a reason. Because if you said, okay, this party is going to get screwed, or this is exactly why we don't want to do it, and you're violating these terms here or something like that, then we would gladly shut it down.
Yeah, if it was a more logical kind of understandable response, then you'd be amenable to it. So one thing that I think is important for this is for folks who haven't spent a lot of time, this isn't a new concept, right? And what I mean by that is, I'll throw a couple of data points out. So the Green Bay Packers, part of the team is owned by the fans, right? The NBA, the NFL actually changed the rules after they did this because they didn't want everyone to go do it. You then go to something like, I think it was called Fantex or something, right? Where you could buy, quote unquote, stock, but it wasn't stock in the contract. It was more stock in the player's future earnings. And I think Arian Foster was a huge user of that. Then you go to Sacramento Kings. They just announced that it's a utility token, or kind of a fan loyalty type thing. So you had kind of previous, you know, revenue share or stock-based ownership in either teams or players, and now you're starting to see tokens. It sounds to me, right, and you haven't said this to me, but I'm going to throw it out there. There may be two sets of rules, right, of like the teams and the things that the accrue value to the league and the owners, etc., get a little bit different treatment than the players. You're looking at me weird, like maybe we shouldn't be going here.
But nah, I mean, the league is known to do what's best for them at the end of the day, right?
Every league does that.
Every league does that, right?
NFL, Protect the Shield, the whole thing.
That's you know what a good broker does, man. That's what they do. I mean, it's crazy to see though them say no so adamantly, and then, you know, the Sacramento Kings launch a utility token like the next week. I was like, wow, that's interesting, folks. Like that's really, really, really interesting. The reason why we didn't do it similar to Fantex or in the Arian Foster model, two reasons. When you IPO on like New York Stock Exchange or anything like that, you usually get ate up in fees. So you have to have a really large contract to do something like that, or you have to have a basket of players to do it to kind of make it work, or be raising a lot of money, right? Then also, you know, it tends to lack liquidity because of what they're trading against. You know, our whole idea in terms of creating this asset class, and obviously we all know the ease of like moving tokens and the tradability of tokens and stuff like that. Now, there is a 1-year lockup because of the, you know, accredited investors and security tokens, Reg D, all that. But, you know, we envision a situation where, you know, almost akin to, I guess, real fantasy sports, right? You could trade a Spencer for a Kyrie, for a KD, for a Jared Allen, for a, you know, Zanin Musa, for Caris LeVert, for, you know, you could do that. And
well, and you can almost like, so this is getting into kind of the future of where this can go, right? Is let's say that we can get over some of the speed bumps here in the short term. Fantasy sports is going to be a real thing, right? Sports betting going to be a real thing in the United States. It's already moving that way. I think the promise of whether it's security tokens, tokenization, all this stuff, right? You know, take real estate. There's been plenty of people who have pitched, oh, you could, you know, go long Soho, short Brooklyn, right? Or, you know, vice versa, whatever. And so you can build these really unique kind of derivative products and all this kind of stuff. What you're talking about is like today, most fantasy sports is like, you're either on my roster or you're not, right? And it's a binary thing. But maybe actually what I want to do is I want to own 20% of your performance this week, right? And I want to own 40% of somebody else. And you start kind of creating these different things where literally maybe I want to go short point guards this year because the league changed the rules and they're going to score less points, right? Or whatever it is.
There you go.
Again, it's all about engagement. And my guess is, considering the way that the league and Adam Silver took the approach of like, hey, we want 1% of all the sports betting, they'll figure out a way to make money on it too.
For sure. And that, but that's the reason why I'm saying, like, I came and sat down at the table. I came and said, here's what we're doing. If you tell me why I can't do it, then I'll stop. But if you say like, hey, let's, you know, find a way to do this right, like, I'm here. So like,
you're open minded and you're being innovative.
Like if there's something that you tell me right now that you're like, you know what, we'll let you, you know, pass go if we can look over the terms of deals prior to them going out, so we make sure that, you know, it checks all the boxes and this and the third, I say cool.
Yep.
Right? Like at the end of the day, my goal is to partner. My goal is to make this a win-win-win. So let's do it. Mm-hmm. Like I said, the disappointing piece was the no, with no mm-hmm. cause, no, you know, answer, no, whatever. It was just no, you know. But you're obviously an extremely bright individual. So, and just talking about those products that can come next and those derivatives, et cetera, and the different niche things that can come after this, it's a whole new world of business that the NBA can capitalize on, right? Mm-hmm. It's not something that, you know, I'm going to be able to do. I'm clearly just defining the class and kind of mm-hmm. showing guys how to set terms for, you know, what they feel is beneficial for them and engaging in their fan base. There's going to be a different whole crop of businesses that are yeah. born on top of this that capitalize on the actual use of the tokens. Like mm-hmm. even the exchanges are going to try to get into this, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to have the you know, what are the biggest exchanges? Binance, Gemini, those guys. Mm-hmm. Like, you're going to have those type of people trying to, you know, trade these in some capacity when they get to securities and stuff, well, right? Off of utilities. Like, it's going to turn to something completely different.
I'll even take it further and say, what happens when I can buy a token that you offer and then I can exchange it at the NBA store for your jersey?
There you go.
Right? And there's some sort of price mechanism that mm-hmm. actually the NBA comes out more on top, right? You come out on top and I get the jersey that I wanted. Yep. You know, and you start playing this whole game and it's like, actually, yeah. Like there's a world where this all can exist, right? What's been the response or the sentiment from the players in the NBA knowing that you're kind of doing this?
Oh, yeah, nah. See, that's the thing. After it leaked and after, you know, we've had some of the stories, like, the players have been like,
yeah, how can I do that?
Oh, my God, yeah. Like, how can we do that? And I'm like, guys, listen, like, I'm going to fight this fight.
We'll let me be the pioneer. Yeah, let's not get the whole league
yeah,
prize.
Yeah, exactly. Like, let's get through this. And then, you know, when we get through this, I'll give you guys the Bible to do it. Like, yep. All the information we gathered, I'll pass it, and you guys can do whatever you want.
Because I got to imagine that once they see it, it's similar to Bitcoin, right? Once the genie was out of the bottle, mm-hmm. everyone's like, you know, then you get 3,000 tokens, sure. right? Same thing here, I think, is once people realize here's the potential, here's how it works, yep. like, yes, it is legal from a regulatory standpoint, the fans are interested, you know, all this kind of stuff, everyone's going to want to do it.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
All right, we got to talk about NBA in China. So I will caveat this whole thing with there's no situation in the world that is binary, black and white. There are no perfect answers. So I just want to ask you some open-ended questions.
For sure.
You kind of run with them as you will. First, what's the take from the players in terms of just like what's going on and kind of the position that you guys have been put in?
Yeah. I would say the toughest part about being a player in the situation was just kind of feeling caught in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
That was really it.
Yeah.
Because we being the Nets and the Lakers were there.
Yeah. Okay. So hold on. I should have started with, let me just, for those that don't know, Daryl Morey, who's the GM of the Rockets and is a huge cryptocurrency fan, for those that don't know, he tweeted out on Twitter saying just like, you know, stand with the people of Hong Kong. It was some kind of pro or supportive tweet of the people of Hong Kong. And he was, it seemed like at least externally, being more like pro-democracy, right?
Yeah.
And kind of pro-free speech, etc. The NBA had teams in China playing,
exactly.
and there was immediate backlash, really across the world, but
for sure.
but specifically in China. And so when it first breaks, what's kind of this? Was it just like, there's this thing going on, or was it immediate like, hey, it's going to be a big deal?
Yeah, it was more so like immediately it was going to be a big deal, especially once like the tweet got deleted and you start hearing all these different things pop up. And, you know, for the players, because it was a fight that we were never trying to either A, fight or to be in. That's why it was so awkward. You know what I mean? Because we were just kind of in China and we're like, so what are we supposed to do, guys?
Trying to play basketball.
Yeah, like we just came here to play basketball and and say hi to the fans and stuff. Like it was that simple. So it was just difficult from that standpoint, just kind of just being literally caught in the middle and it not being something that we did.
Mm-hmm. And then you and your teammates specifically have kind of an additional level of complexity in that the owner of the Nets is one of the co-founders of Alibaba.
Yep.
And I was pretty impressed. He responded, right?
Yeah.
And I was pretty impressed with the level of detail that he went through to explain a perspective that I don't think a lot of Western Americans understand, right?
Yeah.
So kind of just how did that kind of play into it on top of just, hey, I'm an NBA player, but then like literally I play for a team that probably understands this at a different level than all the other teams in the league.
Yeah, you know, Joe's a phenomenal dude. He's been my favorite team owner to interact with so far. That's my guy. And you know, actually it was an educational process for our at minimum our team, right? Because we did have a chance to sit down and talk to Joe, and he kind of debriefed us on the situation and the severity, and was just honest with, you know, what was going on and his personal opinion and why he wrote, you know, the letter that he wrote, which we all respected, and like I said, we gained knowledge from it. And you know, he really kind of broke down why it was you know, a sensitive topic for, you know, the country.
Yeah. And the part to me, and I told you this beforehand, that like, and this is my personal perspective, this is not Spencer's perspective, that I felt was unfair in the whole situation was the press conferences where players, I didn't see a video of you getting kind of ambushed, but I saw some other players that they've got to be there, right? You know, the whole Marshawn Lynch, I'm only here so I don't get fined, right? They're sitting up there. And reporters, granted, they're just trying to do their job, right? So they're asking questions, but the questions are almost like, I know I got you trapped. I know you got a microphone in front of you, and I'm going to try to elicit you to say just things that'll catch headlines. Just felt a little unfair, I think, to the players.
For sure, for sure. I mean, I would say in general, we find ourselves in situations like that sometimes. And that's definitely not all media. You know, media, there's a lot of media that does a phenomenal job. There's a lot of media that has been great to players. A lot of media that, you know, enhances, you know, the game and the individual and all that stuff. And then, you know, there are some instances, whether it's, you know, you missing something as small as you missing the game-winning shot, or you kind of being in the middle of some, you know, political controversy where they do ask pointed questions based upon, you know, the situation that you're in, and try to elicit that response that they know could be negative, right? You know, those are situations that are unfair, but, you know, they happen. They happen, and it's on us to be authentic to whatever it is that we feel in that moment, whether it's to comment or not comment. And, you know, I think that's why you saw, like, you know, like the Steve Kerrs, et cetera, of the world kind of say, look, I'm not well-versed on the topic, and I know, you know, President had his opinions about that, but, you know, you're well within your right to say, I don't know. There's nothing wrong with not knowing everything.
Look, there's some people who should be saying, I don't know, and they don't.
For sure, right? For sure.
Because, and let's kind of pull away from China and just more kind of, this, you know, social impact and cultural impact that professional athletes can have. The thing that I think a lot of people kind of forget very easily is the same, you know, kind of, oh, it's uncomfortable as an athlete to be put in a position where I'm getting asked questions, I don't understand something, you know, whatever. A lot of these athletes are still using that same exact star power, et cetera, for really good things in their communities, in the United States, all this stuff. And I always go back to the beautiful thing about the United States is, I don't care if you agree with the person or not.
Yeah.
They have the right to do it. They have the freedom to do it.
For sure.
And if you look across the NBA, NFL, kind of all these leagues, most of the guys are doing really positive things.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And they're using it to their benefit, of their communities, et cetera. And so, you know, it's kind of just like, everyone take a deep breath.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I think when you look at where a lot of these guys came from and then being able to succeed at the different levels that they're able to succeed, we all have a certain level of, you know, indebtedness to where we came from and wanting to, you know, have a positive impact on those places and on those people. And you know, the more that doing good has become in vogue and become public and all these things, like, you know, you're just seeing more and more. And so the more positive light we can shed on things instead of negative, just positive energy in general, like, it's contagious, and it does wonders for, you know, everybody that's, you know, around it and associated with it.
For sure. I usually end up with rapid fire questions about crypto, but because I got you here, we're going with some basketball rapid fire. LeBron, Jordan, or Kobe, who's the GOAT?
Who's the GOAT?
I know you've debated this probably for too many hours of your life.
See, I'm gonna throw something else at you guys. I'm not even gonna pick, because Kobe's my favorite player, so I'm biased. But I will say, the GOAT across all different levels of basketball is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, high school, college, pro. Had to change the rules for him. He's the leading scorer in NBA history. Like, if we're talking about full career GOAT, then it's him. If we're just talking about, like, you know, 6 years of your prime, then it's Jordan, because he had the 6-0. But
okay,
full career, I'm going Kareem.
I think that's actually a pretty good, like, legitimate answer.
Yeah.
They changed the rules. It's a pretty hard thing to argue against. What's your favorite NBA playoff memory?
Favorite NBA playoff memory?
Not that you, but like as a fan.
As a fan?
Yeah.
Oh, it had to be the tip out to Ori's three. That was
big shot Bob.
Oh, big shot Bob. Yeah, because I was panicking. You know, the little kid that was a super Laker fan in LA was panicking at the moment. Like, guys, like, we're not really finna lose, are we? Like, come on.
That's a pretty good one. And then if you could play with any player in the NBA today, who would it be?
Kevin Durant.
can we get some inside knowledge on how this all went down?
You know, they had that famous phone call. That's what they said, right? They had the famous phone call where they got on three-way FaceTime at like 4 a.m. And then, you know,
who was on it? It was KD,
Kyrie, and DJ.
And that was it. 4 a.m. three-way FaceTime.
Sign sealed. Deal done.
I gotta admit, part of the NBA that did not exist when I was a kid or when you were a kid that now has become so kind of enthralling is was a couple of years ago when everyone was tweeting the emojis, right? Who's going to go get you know, was it DeAndre Jordan, I think, or something?
Yeah, like got trapped in his house and stuff.
Yeah, he's like, hey, I'm not leaving. Right? The phone calls, you know, Kawhi Leonard, right? Yep. Calling up people and it kind of is more entertaining than some of the actual basketball developments, right? Yeah. How does all this stuff happen?
Yeah, no, the NBA has done a great job of like making free agency a must-see TV event, you know, and keeping us on the minds of the fans for, you know, the full 12 months.
Yeah, absolutely. What's your favorite book?
My favorite book. Actually, you know, this is going to kind of be a little.
Come on, you got a 1400 on the SAT. Don't hit me with something stupid.
No, I'm not going to hit you with something stupid. I'm going to say the Bible because that's what I'm tasking myself with reading through front to back this year.
Wow.
Yeah.
How far do you think you are?
No. I'm saying that's what this is going to be like my season task.
It's during the season.
Yeah, front to back.
That's actually pretty good.
Not just passages, but like start to finish.
All right. You're going to come back and we're going to see if you finish at the end of the season.
There we go.
I usually let everyone ask me one question to end, but before, aliens, believer, non-believer, are they real?
I'm a believer.
Yeah? Why?
I am. I don't know. I feel like stuff that happens just is... It's not all coincidence. It's not just all random. Like, I feel like things have purpose. Technology advances quickly. Like, we have all these ideas, and they all keep, you know, manifesting in this similar type of, like, depiction, right? And it's like, y'all all thought about aliens, and they all look the same way? How did that happen? Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. Like, we couldn't get a variety of imagination here?
No, it's government propaganda. They all got to be yellow or green, slimy little guys, right? Who come down and talk weird. All right, what one question you have for me to finish this?
What one question?
I'm nervous what you could ask me.
No, I'm not.
Most crypto people come in and ask me crazy stuff, but you could ask me all kinds of
crazy stuff. Personal question.
All right.
2030. What do you see Bitcoin and finance in general?
That's a good question.
Not just price prediction, but where do you see it, like how it falls?
You'll get the compliance department to come over here and kill me if I do prices.
Yeah.
So I think that I could talk about it from like a trend standpoint because I think that's the easiest thing to be right about, right? Mm-hmm. So kind of from a selfish standpoint. First, I think a lot about automated finance. Mm-hmm. So if you think of every stock, bond, currency, and commodity being digitized, that unlocks the potential for automation. Yeah. So we see a little bit of it today. You know, robo-advisors is kind of advising you on how to invest your capital. Or we see things like, you know, with crypto, you can like put your Bitcoin in and get a US dollar loan and some of the DeFi stuff, right? Or tokenized dollars, et cetera. So I think all that stuff will just become more and more prominent, but it's intersecting with like true automation. Yeah. So things like Plaid, et cetera, where you can pull in all of your bank information. Mm-hmm. I can do a better underwriting model to give you a loan, like that type of stuff. So I think that's one. Two, I really do believe that we're going to see more and more, when I say currencies fail, and these are nation state currencies, it's not like, they failed because somebody like blew up the country, like that type of stuff, right? It's more of just throughout history, if you look from literally the time, you know, ancient Roman times, the downfall of currencies was debasing them, right? And so that's what we're doing with inflation and QE and all this stuff. And so I don't think that that's like a 50% of the currencies fail by 2030, right? I think it's a small percentage, but I think we will continue to see this. And again, some small subset of people will kind of keep putting capital into Bitcoin. at some point in the future, I do think it becomes a global reserve currency.
Wow.
It's because it has the one thing that none of the other currencies have, right? So, like, I always go back to this idea that in order to have really, really big innovations, normally what happens is somebody does something different and they're right.
Yeah.
So Bitcoin's definitely doing something different in that it's a non-nation state backed currency.
Yeah.
It's a deflationary structure with a disinflationary monetary supply, and it can't be manipulated because it's kind of software algorithmically disciplined. Those three things are very, very different than every other currency.
Yeah.
So we got the be different down.
For sure.
If it ends up being right, changes the world. Right.
Sure.
And so if you look around the world, why would somebody be interested in this? Well, if you live in a country where you're worried about, you know, your country or one of the corporations seizing your assets, the fact that it's non-seizable is pretty important.
Exactly.
Right. Here in the U.S., like, I don't know about you, but I'm not worried about, like, you know, Bank of America taking 10% of my... Now, it could happen in Cyprus, you know,
for sure.
But that's just not a daily concern. I'm much more worried about the fluctuation in price, right, because the dollar is stable versus that.
Yeah.
So if you just look around the world, like, time and time again, we see these little examples pop up. Eventually, that becomes, like, it's kind of like a drum in the background, and the next thing you know, it's, like, the main show.
Exactly.
Right? So I think that'll happen. And the last thing... that I think is pretty interesting is white collar jobs will actually be more affected by the automation than blue collar jobs.
Gotcha.
But the advice will become more important. So look at lawyers, right? Like, everyone's like, oh, we're just gonna, like, automate away the lawyers. No, what you're gonna do is you're gonna automate away, like, the paperwork
and
the
drafting. But you still need the opinion and the
it's gonna become more important, right? Because now I can't read the code.
Exactly.
So if I can't read the code, I really need to make sure somebody can audit it, somebody can give me advice, like, all that kind of stuff. So again, this is stuff, you know, you're asking me basically 10, 12 years out, right, type stuff. And so it's generally we're going to move in that direction. Will it happen right by 2030? I don't know.
Of course.
But I definitely think that all is likely where we're going.
Can I get one more
question? Come on.
Like, in terms of, like, ease of moving these things around, right?
Yep.
Like, where do you see that turning to? Like, what? Because obviously, like, CryptoKitties tanked Ethereum, right? And so now you have all these other, like, blockchains that are more scalable and whatnot in terms of, like, the smart contract based layer, not so much the currency piece of it, right? But, like, where do you see what else do you see that can kind of, like, move and do these things at
those
types of levels?
So there's no one direct answer. I usually answer this kind of from a couple different angles. Take cell phones, right? When cell phones first came out, they're these big brick things. You had to be pretty wealthy to get one, or you had to be doing a bunch of nefarious shit to have a cell phone, right? There's basically the two types of people who had cell phones. But you couldn't call everyone.
Yeah.
So, like, if you were the one friend out of all of your friends who had a cell phone, well, it was cool because if your friend went to a payphone, they could call you, or from their house, they could call you, and they could get you because you were with your mobile phone. But it wasn't as valuable to you if none of your other friends had, because you still call their house, they're not there, you know, all this kind of stuff. So as you got more density in the cell phone network, the cell phones became more valuable, right? The other piece of it is the technology doesn't necessarily have to be the best, it has to be good enough, right? And so you look at Betamax versus VHS, you know, all these examples. And so when I look at, like, how the assets move around today, right, I actually fall in the category of, yes, there are definitely things that could be quote unquote better, right? In terms of, like, oh, it's not instantaneous in seconds.
Yeah.
But if you know, I've said twice now. So one, if I want to send a Bitcoin on the Lightning Network, it will actually settle faster than if I put a credit card chip into a chip reader.
Yeah.
You know, when you go to, like, a Starbucks or something, you put the chip in there.
It takes, like, what, 30 seconds, 40 seconds?
Yeah, and it's, like, you know, processing, approving, whatever. Like, it's pretty fast, right? Obviously. Yeah. But it's still the Lightning Network can be faster, right? And then if you look at sending Bitcoin on the Bitcoin network versus sending a wire at the bank takes one day to settle.
Yeah.
So let's say that the Bitcoin transaction takes 10 minutes. It's a pretty material improvement, right? And so it's all kind of relative, but the thing that becomes most important is it's highly, highly, highly secure with no centralized authority.
Yeah.
And so to me, it's if you are the best at the security and the lack of centralized authority,
and you can, like, live with the time.
Well, it just will improve over time, right? Go back to the internet, the dial-up, right? Like, you're probably, you know, I'm 31, so you're probably similar age, right?
Yeah,
AOL, right? We used to literally, like, that was, like, the first scheme I had, right? Was like, all right, I got the 30-day trial. How do I get another 30-day trial? So we never paid for AOL, right? But we always had the free trials. And so if you were using the internet, you couldn't use the phone line.
Yeah.
Right. And then, like, I remember, like, my mom would be screaming, "Get off the internet, because I need to make a phone call." Right. Like, today we'd be like, what?
Exactly.
But in, you know, that was in the mid 90s.
Yeah.
Right? Oh. So we're talking 20, 25 years max. Like, that's how far we've come.
Yeah.
And so, you know, look out again, 10, 15, 20 years with Bitcoin. Like, I'm not saying that it's going to be, you know, I blink and my brain wallet sends a Bitcoin to a machine and kind of like, you know, this super like sci-fi futuristic stuff. But I am saying that it's going to be much better improved user experience, better, you know, in terms of scalability, speed, lower fees, all that kind of stuff. But it takes time.
For sure.
People are, you know, they're looking at it like, you know, hey, the iPhone.
Yeah.
12-year-old technology. There's a lot of cell phones before the iPhone.
Yeah.
Right? Now, it's the same technology, though, right? So I don't actually think that something's going to replace Bitcoin. I think that it's just going to take time for people to keep building and improving the Bitcoin technology, and eventually it'll be what everyone wants it to be, but it's just going to take some time.
Makes sense.
So.
Perfect.
Whatever. All right. Anything? Well, hold on. Where can people go find out about the contract and kind of what you're doing with tokenization?
Dreamfanshares.com.
Dreamfanshares.com. Yeah. Where the name come from?
So fan shares, I mean, obviously is, you know, what we're
pretty self-explanatory.
Doing. Yeah, pretty self-explanatory. The acronym Dream. So the company that builds my shoes is called Project Dream. And so, you know, when I signed on to do that and got, you know, some co-founder equity in it, I just really loved what they were kind of doing with the Disrupt Reality Every Available Moment, like the acronym.
Disrupt Reality Every Available Moment.
Yeah, all just right. The acronym that they were doing. So I was like, hey, guys, you know, fanshares.com or whatever it was is taken. I was like, hey, do you think like I could borrow the acronym? And they're like, yeah, go for it. And I was like, all right, cool.
Yeah, just put a link on there.
Yeah, there you go.
Awesome, man. All right, well, best of luck with this. We'll definitely make sure that we tweet it out and everything when it goes live.
Perfect.
And then good luck with the season. And when you come back, we're gonna see if you got done reading the Bible and if you guys win an NBA championship.
Thank you, brother.
All right, sounds good.
All right.
Hey, everyone. Pomp here. If you like this episode of Off the Chain and want to help us take crypto to the top of the Apple, Spotify, and other podcast charts, please do us a favor and rate, review, and subscribe. To review, simply go to the Off the Chain homepage, scroll down until you see the 5 blank stars. Taking 15 seconds to fill those stars in and leave a quick review goes a long way in helping us take the entire crypto ecosystem to the top of the charts. I appreciate you listening and see you next time on Off the Chain.